Mr. Shelley?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. On the merits, the district court clearly erred in dismissing this case under Heck versus Humphrey. Heck itself has a passage in it that directly addresses Mr. Jones's situation and holds that Heck doesn't cover that situation and doesn't bar the situation. It doesn't bar the lawsuit here.
The government's made an objection to jurisdiction here. Don't you think you need to start with that?
Well, the main issue, you're right, Your Honor, is jurisdiction. So let's turn to that then right away. The threshold point is that Mr. Jones finds himself in a predicament regarding appellate jurisdiction through no fault of his own. It takes a little bit of knowledge about the facts to understand that, so I just want to cover the facts for a minute. His suit was filed, civil suit was filed in June of 2007. It was stayed pending his second drug trial, and all the while of that time, Jones was in the D.C. jail. He remained in the D.C. jail the whole time until August of 2008, which is 2 months after the district court's underlying decision. The whole time he was receiving his mail, the government's filings, the court filings, but the decision comes out in May of 2008, and he doesn't get it. It's clear, no one disputes it wasn't delivered to him. The mail system didn't get it to him. He's then sent to Oklahoma 2 months later, and then gets ultimately to Colorado, where he's in lockdown, has no access to any records, no access to the library, but sends the district court a letter saying, I'm wondering what's happening with my case. The district court then sends a docket sheet to Mr. Jones in his new location. He learns that his case was dismissed. He asks for a copy of the decision. He gets it, and within 3 weeks, he goes to the district court and says, rescue me from this situation, essentially.
Isn't your first problem that, regardless of the reason for the great delay in getting word to him, the statute has this 6 months or 180 days,
yes.
Limit, which in context has to be read as being unrelated to
the circumstances
when the would-be appellant gets word.
It is a problem, Your Honor, for everyone but a prisoner in Mr. Jones's situation.
I don't see how the prisoner, I mean, it seems to me under Houston versus Lack, I mean, I know the government opposes the application of Houston versus Lack here, but it would seem to me that it could fit in if it did any help for him on the notice of appeal. But I just don't see that it does because
the statute forecloses Houston.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
We have raised two bases for jurisdiction. The one is Houston versus Lack, and the court would have to extend the law and say Houston versus Lack covers this situation, and a prisoner is the one remaining person who, after Bowles, has the ability for an equitable situation to modify what on its face looks like the statutory terms.
That's more like a contradiction than an extension, isn't it?
Well, Houston versus Lack, in a way, was the same.
No discretion to extend. It's jurisdictional. Now we'd be coming back and saying, well, not really.
In the one situation, the Supreme Court previously said it could be done. But I think our better argument, and I think you can tell this from our brief, our main argument is that the January 2009 filing is really to be construed as a Rule 60B1 motion. If that is construed as a Rule 60B1 motion, as the government says, it can be construed as a motion for relief from judgment. If it's construed as such, the district court then denied that in February of 2009, and he does appeal in March. That denial.
Putting aside the government's argument, do you have any cases where something pretty clearly labeled motion for leave to file notice of appeal is treated as a 60B motion?
I don't have a case that was called that and was treated as a 60B motion, but Tulis Prashad is a case where someone filed a motion for extension of time, and it was deemed to be a Rule 60B motion. There are Rule 59 motions that are often deemed to be Rule 60 motions, and I think you have to look at the substance, too, of what Jones filed. When Jones made his filing, the filing on its face asks for relief from the district court as well as the Court of Appeals. He noted on, this is at page A16 of the appendix, He says lower courts have stated that pro se litigants should receive notice of the deficiencies in their complaints as well as an opportunity to amend them before the complaints are dismissed. And Judge Leon had sua sponte dismissed this. Then at the end, he asked the court, he says, plaintiff is requesting the court to allow him to amend his complaint and requests the appeals court to remand the civil case back to the district court to proceed to a jury trial. So whatever he labeled it and called it, he's asking for relief from the district court and from the court of appeals. And we think it can be called a Rule 60B motion because he never got a chance anyway to speak to Judge Leon's concerns since this was all done sua sponte.
Mr. Shope, what was the page? Sorry.
Sure. Page A16 is where he makes A16 of the appendix.
Yeah.
In the middle of the page is where he states that lower courts mm-hmm. have stated pro se litigants should receive notice of the deficiencies in their complaints as well as an opportunity to amend them before complaints are dismissed. And then a few pages later, at 821, in his conclusion, second last paragraph, and this is written by a prisoner again, plaintiff is requesting court to allow amend his complaint and requesting the appeals court to remand the civil case back to the district court to proceed to a jury trial. I think you can construe that, and it is, a request to the district court to fix this situation. And he goes through for pages about why Heck versus Humphrey was misconstrued by Judge Leon. And for a prisoner, actually, he cites the right parts of the case, and Judge Leon didn't grant his motion. But I think it properly can be construed as a motion for leave, as a motion for relief from judgment, as well as a motion for leave to appeal, as well as even a notice of appeal. It's a lot of things. But he's proceeding pro se, and you have to construe this in the manner most favorable to Mr. Jones, because he is a pro se prisoner under the D.C. Circuit case law. So that for jurisdiction, that's the first hurdle on the 60B1 theory that he has to meet, that this is a really can be construed plausibly as a Rule 60B1 motion, and we think it can be. The next question you have to reach that the government says is Rule 60B available for the correction of legal errors? And as we noted in our brief, we think that's decided by the Smalls case. Other circuits have...
Smalls in no way had to confront the issue of use of 60B as an end run around appeal limits. I mean, it simply doesn't talk about it one way or the other. It can be so used, it has problems.
But there were two motions for reconsideration, two Rule 60B motions that were filed in Smalls. One of them was after the appeal time was done. And so to review that motion for reconsideration, which the court did there, would have been, you could argue, outside the appeal time. I think in that case in Smalls, if I recollect, there was a early December dismissal of the case. There is a late December motion for reconsideration, and then there's a March motion for reconsideration, which would have been out of time if the appeal time is the time limit for a motion for reconsideration.
I'm at page 189 of the opinion, and it says, filed second motion for reconsideration. Well, the opinion says it's the court denied it, again relying on the reasons in its decision. So do we have anything new from the March motion for reconsideration that plays any role in the substance?
I can't answer that question because I didn't go back and look at two motions. But in Smalls, what the court then does, though, is that it accepts the fact that you could, a Rule 60B1 motion could be used to correct legal errors, and then it says, but there were no obvious legal errors. And the important point, too, is that the court cited a series of cases in saying that the errors had to be clear, the legal errors had to be clear in order for the appellant to win that case, and cites the Halicki case, particularly from the Fifth Circuit, which is basically the leading case that says a legal error can be corrected if it's obvious under Rule 60B1. I'd like to reserve whatever remaining time
just
I have
before
for
you
sure.
The argument you made before, and that's I guess in your reply brief at 8, is that it's that about 60B1 relates to the January 31st filing, correct?
Yes.
And the district court requesting various things.
Yes.
Okay, and Just restate for me, if you would, the timing on this. If it's treated as a Rule 60B1 motion,
yes.
What makes it timely as such?
In the district court,
yeah.
Or the appeal here?
Well,
in the district court.
Yeah. You want us to read it as a 60B motion to the district court.
Well, a 60B...
It's filed with the district court.
Correct. Okay. A 60B1 motion is then governed by 60C, which says that a 60B1 motion can be made within any time that's reasonable after the judgment, up to a year. And so if the decision did come out in May of 2008, mm-hmm. he moves in January of 2009, which is within a year. And it's also, the real test is reasonableness. Judge Williams mentioned this being an end around an appeal. To the extent courts have lowered the year time limit, it's been because of strategic decisions they've made and then are trying to undo through a Rule 60B motion. That didn't at all happen here. Mr. Jones has been a very diligent litigant. He just, through his circumstances as a prisoner, he may be barred by the 180-day rule that Judge Williams mentioned in getting an actual appeal, but 60B is there for these type of situations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Alexander Schwabe for the United States. The petitioner in this case essentially attempts to rewrite the clear notice of appeal that was filed by petitioner in January of 2009. It is a notice of appeal. It is a time-barred, jurisdictionally barred notice of appeal in this case. And because of that, there is no jurisdiction and cannot be considered by this court. If you look at the January 9th, 2009 filing, it seeks leave to file an appeal. It calls it a notice of appeal. It cites the 30-day rule improperly because of the United States, but still clearly he is referring to the 30-day rule here. If you look further on A17, he says, on this 31st day of January 2009, plaintiff is filing a notice of appeal and requesting the Court of Appeals to accept my excusable time delay. The district court erred. He goes on to say on A20, plaintiff is requesting the appeals courts to grant this petition and remand the civil action back to the district court to proceed to a jury trial. This is a notice of appeal, and it's late because it's well beyond the 180 days that would be allowed under Appellate Rule A6, under 28 U.S.C. 2107, and there are no grounds to allow this to be filed.
You deny that it has been reframed, relabeled. It would be a pretty good motion for reconsideration, assuming that legal error counts.
I would not. I don't. The reframing or the relawyering of it, or the lawyering of it, to allow it to be filed, simply would not. It doesn't even approach anything that should be considered by this court. I mean, it's a notice of appeal and it's late, and it's called
a notice of appeal. You're wrong on that.
Well, it's
a motion for leave to file a notice of appeal. I mean, that's what it says it is, right?
It's a motion for leave to file notice, but it is again. I will say that because it's done by a pro se, he may have called it that. But what it is the notice of appeal. He's asking the district court to send the case up to the Court of Appeals, and he repeatedly says that throughout this document for review and for remand. So it has the word motion in front of it, but the fact of the matter is it is for all practical purposes a notice of appeal, and there is absolutely no reason or grounds to rewrite it as anything else.
Well, since he's pro se, isn't the question whether there's anything in here, in this document, that would support the interpretation that he's now giving it? Not whether there are things inconsistent with that, but is there anything to support it? And counsel's pointed us to pages 16 and 21 for that purpose. What do you say to those?
Your Honor, I don't find those particularly...
16, lower courts have stated that pro se litigant should receive notice of the deficiencies in their complaints as well as an opportunity to amend them before complaint are dismissed. That seems to address itself to the district court, right?
Well, it's a statement of the law, and it may, but it in no way says I'm asking the district court to reconsider its decision.
Route 21, plaintiff is request court to allow, amends his complaint, and requesting the appeal court to remand this civil case back to district court to proceed to a jury trial. So there are two requests in that one sentence, one seemingly addressed to the district court and one to the Court of Appeals.
Well,
so while I think it's fair to say that the weight of the relevant passages suggest that it was directed to the Court of Appeals, there is something in here directed to the district court, and I'm not sure why that isn't enough in view of his status as
Your Honor, I do not believe that it is enough. I think it is very, very sparse, and it's so clearly meant to be an appeal to the Court of Appeals to change what the district court has done. And that's the way it's written. And Mr. Shelley has done an artful job of trying to rewrite it, but it is a rewriting of it. And there is no real precedent for doing something like this. In the cases that he cites, even in Tupal Sharad, for example, that is a case that was and always was a motion for reconsideration. There was a motion to file a late motion for reconsideration. They changed that to the motion to reconsideration in order to save the pro se plaintiff on a time basis. But it was never anything but that. This was always a notice of appeal that is being rewritten, and there are no grounds to do so.
In addition to its being a pro se filing, I think it's also relevant, I think, that we're instructed to favor dispositions on the merits, which his petition would facilitate if he was allowed to proceed as though it's timely.
Well, Your Honor, I think the question becomes, was what was done an abuse of discretion in this case? And being presented with a document that is, for the most part, with the exceptions Your Honor has noted, clearly a notice of appeal that is jurisdictionally barred under the case law, under the statute and the case law, there's certainly no grounds here to find an abuse of discretion by the lower court in refusing to docket this appeal.
Well, if the district court was erred with regard to the interpretation of the rules, or as applied to this filing, I know we say an error of law is an abuse of discretion, but it would be an error of law, would it not? Because of the view that there's simply no exception, no possibility for this to be timely.
And Your Honor is saying that if for some reason it could be considered timely, would it be an error of law?
Yeah.
Well, I think as an abuse of discretion, it would be. But that's not really relevant here because it's, again, it's jurisdictionally barred. If you're talking about considering it as a 60B,
In other words, since the issue is jurisdictional, the resolution of that issue can't be discretionary, correct? It must be a matter of law.
Absolutely.
If the district court erred here in any way, it has to have erred with respect to the law, which I grant you, and the Supreme Court has said, well, an error of law is an abuse of discretion.
Right.
But it's a different way of getting there than saying an abuse of discretion, such as with regard to the length of a sentence or something like that.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. I believe that's right.
Okay.
It was not such here. Again, with regard to the 60B, I mean, I don't think we need to get there, because I think we're so clearly in the area of no jurisdiction.
You don't have to get there. In other words, we look at the document and you say we conclude confidently that it's. Can't be construed as a notice of appeal. I'm sorry. We can't read it as a motion for reconsideration.
I think that's correct, Your Honor. And I think that under the circumstances, it's simply, if you look at it, it's simply not. It's a prisoner trying to appeal, and he's out because the law clearly says that he's out. He's beyond 180 days. As a matter of fact, if you look at when he received it, the latest possible date in which he received it, he still filed beyond 14 days from that point. So even if the 180 days hadn't run, he would still be out of time. Regardless, we would say that the district court should be affirmed because of the clear fact that this is an out-of-time filing by the petitioner. Thank you.
Mr. Shelley, we'll give you a couple of minutes to respond.
Thank you, Your Honor. The only point I want to make is that Mr. Shobey is very, very strongly asserts that that January 31st filing can only be deemed a notice of appeal or a motion for leave to file a notice of appeal. But that's not what he said in his brief at pages 17 and 18. There's an argument going on about whether this could be a Rule 59 motion, and Mr. Shobey says it can be. It can be a motion to alter or amend a judgment. It's just untimely there. But this is the way they characterize it. On the bottom of 17, the government says, the substance of Jones's January 2009 filing more closely resembles a Rule 59e motion than a Rule 60b motion, not a notice of appeal, because Jones, in effect, requests relief from judgment. On the next page, 18, first full paragraph, in his January 2009 filing, Jones requested that the district court correct an error. That's the filing we're talking about. He asserted that the district court erred when it dismissed his complaint based on Heck and Williams. He further asserted that he is entitled to monetary relief without conviction being overturned. Jones maintained that his civil complaint, even if successful, would not necessarily imply that the plaintiff's conviction was unlawful. In essence, Jones claimed that the district court committed a legal error, misapplying Heck and dismissing his complaint. In addition to the
I was looking at... I guess the government summary is Tullus Rashad, and it seems to have the two documents there, which are sort of put together by the court, had the phrase motion for reconsideration right there as their labels. And I guess in terms of the burden imposed on district courts by various rulings, The ruling in Tullus Rashad is not burden imposed by that does not seem overwhelming. Well, the burden imposed by your argument seems to me quite substantial.
Well, I guess what I would say is I think you can have a limiting principle. If the document itself requests relief from the district court concerning the dismissal, which is what Mr. Jones did in the sentences that Judge Ginsburg noted before and that I pointed out, it's not a hard standard. You have to have something like that in the document.
Notwithstanding the labeling.
The labeling doesn't matter.
The court has to read everything, right? Even though the labeling doesn't give a hint.
At least in a prisoner pro se case where the prisoner needs to be given the benefit of the doubt, his document, if it contains in it a request for relief from a district court such as he had, it should be deemed a Rule 60B motion, even if he mislabeled it.
Well, was there anything in the document itself about the timeliness?
About it being untimely? I can file this as a 60. Well, he didn't characterize it as.
So there wasn't that flag for the district court.
But it was timely. It was timely because it was within a year and under the circumstances reasonable.
No, I understand that, but what your argument on that, but it didn't say in addition to these two passages arguably directed to the district court.
Right.
It didn't say anything to the effect that
an appeal
this should not be regarded as untimely.
As an appeal. As an appeal?
Oh, it said that
he did.
As an appeal.
He addressed that. He said he went over his circumstances and said there's excusable neglect because I never knew about the district court's ruling.
Right. Where does that appear?
That's okay. This would be on A17, first full paragraph. Plaintiff did not receive any notice of motion or order to dismiss case, and he goes through the circumstances as to how he didn't receive notice of it, and he even notes that when he now had access to the docket after his new prison wasn't in lockdown anymore, that the mailing of that opinion to him was noted as undeliverable on the district court's docket. And I will also note for the court that on page A38 is a memo from his counselor at that prison noting that the entire time he was in the prison in Florence, Colorado, which is most of this period from the time of the judgment to the time he makes this filing, that prison was in lockdown. He had no access to the library and basically was had to stay in his cell the whole time.
Now, this document, A38, what is that?
That's a memo that Mr. Jones put in with the district court, noting it's from his counselor, his prison counselor, within the prison in Florence, Colorado, noting that the prison had been in total lockdown status all the time he was there. Basically, he's trying to explain the circumstances as to why he couldn't get access to the docket of the district court or even know what was going on.
Did he append this to the document at 16?
Yes, he did, yes, to the motion for leave. All of this was attached there, I believe. If there are no
What you're suggesting is the limiting principle. There was something to alert the district court in the filing itself that it would not just that it was from a prisoner, but that he didn't have and couldn't have had notice.
Yeah. Well, yes, I would say this document plus his explanation on that page earlier, where he explains the circumstances, should have showed Judge Leon that through no fault of his own, he was in a situation where his appellate rights with the 180 days had been snuffed out.
But the trouble is that viewing it entirely as a notice of appeal,
nothing
none of that
Leon
is any good.
Pardon me?
Viewing it as a notice of appeal, none of that is any good.
Right. Unless Houston versus Lack sets up one exception remaining after Bowles for the notice of appeal, for it to be deemed not the time not to yet run until a prisoner actually receives the notice of the decision. But I we'd go with the 60B theory.
I'm not sure I understand the implication of that. Viewing it as a notice of appeal, none of that does it any good, seems to me to add weight to the reasons for viewing it as something else. Namely,
Rule 60B motion,
or as the government suggested, Rule 59, but something other than a notice of appeal.
Yeah. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with interpreting that document as a request from the district court for relief from judgment under 59, and then alternatively 60, which it should be if it was untimely under 59.
You want to hear back from the government?
And so the government's argument on that starts with if it is to be construed as a motion. It's not actually a concession that it can properly be considered as a motion under 59 or 60.
In its brief?
Yeah.
I think you can read it that way, but I think it can also be read as it's a lengthy statement about what was going on in that,
it goes on
in that motion.
But it is introduced by the if clause.
Yes, Your Honor.
If this court chooses to consider the filing under other rules, it should choose 59E, not 60B. The substance more closely resembles 59E.
But that's because the government thinks that only 59 can be used to correct legal errors, that Rule 60 can't be used to correct legal errors.
I understand that. Yep. All of this discussion is if the court chooses to consider the filing under other rules other than the...
It's a backup.
It is. But my point was the government's characterization is exactly the way then I would characterize it when they make their argument. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Do you want to...